says هر کجا مشکل جواب آنجا رود. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. هر کجا کشتی آب آنجا رود. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. آب کم جو تشنگی آور به دست. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. تا بجوشد آب از بالا و پست. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah. Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever.
The ocean of dua.
Anyway, dear listeners, this much of the discussion and illustrations of love and shawq and intimacy from our supplications of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam seems to be enough, and in the later program we'll manage to take up another discussion regarding the love of the Almighty Allah. So stay with us. Thank you for being with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
The first type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For Humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam.
By Hujjatul Islam, Zayd As-Salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio and the program For Humanity, where we are discussing Imam Ali al-Sajjad's Risalatul Huquq, the Treatise of Rights. And at the moment we are continuing on with speaking about the rights of your associates, those who you are in company with. those who you mix and mingle with. And there are many verses in the Holy Quran and traditions from Ahlul Bayt that speak about the rights of companionship. And these hold true for our associate too. But of course, we need to understand that there are many things that I need to be observant of, and there are things that I need to make sure that my associate also carries as far as their qualities are concerned. So far, we've been speaking about being selective in the type of people that you want to mix with and the friends that you want to choose. You need to make sure that you select friends or associates who are good as far as their conduct is concerned. They're intelligent, they're experienced, they're polite, and you want to avoid, as Imam Ali and our Imams have said, you want to avoid someone who is ignorant or someone who is far from intelligent and someone who is going to be foolish. You know, as Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, إِيَّاكَ وَمُصَاحَبَةُ الْأَحْمَقِ. Be careful of befriending a foolish person, because he is going to harm you under the pretense that he thinks that he is or she is benefiting you, because they don't know what they're doing. They don't have any level of wisdom. And it's been pointed out earlier as well that our friends or our associates need to have certain qualities. They need to be inclined to doing good, because they are going to want to encourage those who are around them, and they are going to encourage you as well. We're like sponges and we absorb everything that is around us. They need to be polite and good-mannered. And also, on the other side, a wicked friend will draw one to ill conduct and will drag you into dark passages in your life. Nothing good comes out of a bad associate. And that's why you need to be personally inclined towards goodness by being selective to who an associate is that would benefit you, and also to a real friend. If you want to test them, then you need to do so. And always a good friend or a good associate is never going to encourage you to do bad and never going to discourage you from doing good. And that's why Imam Sajjad admonishes against any kind of cheating or trickery or deception or ignoring or lying towards those who are around us. And of course, even though these be natural things, unfortunately, they do occur in our society. We're just going to go for a short break and we will be back very soon.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back again, dear listeners. And so far, we've been speaking about a deceitful person and us not deceiving others, nor in us associating with someone who is deceitful. We should also never associate with people who are not intelligent. Intelligent does not mean that they have an advanced degree. Intelligent means that they are wise and experienced. They know what they're doing. They know what they're saying. Being deceitful implies acting opposite to what you are thinking. And of course, no one wants to hang around with a person who is a hypocrite or has double standards. Imam Sadiq, peace be upon him, he says, لَيْسَ مِنَّا مَنْ مَاكَرَ مُسْلِمًا. This is a beautiful saying from Imam Al-Sadiq, peace be upon him, simply saying that one who deceives other people is not classified as a true Muslim. One who is deceitful to a Muslim is not from among us, cannot be classified as being from among us. Also, another hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, from Imam Ali, peace be upon him, about lying as well, because if the rights of who we associate with is that we never lie to them, he says, يَنْبَغِ لِلْرَجُلِ الْمُسْلِمِ, it is necessary for a Muslim person, for a Muslim man, to avoid becoming friends or associating with al-kadhab, with a liar. For he will lie until when they finally tell the truth, they're not going to be believed. It's very similar, it's very like that story of the shepherd boy and the wolf. Because, in short, a good friend is one that brings about blessings from Almighty God. And there are going to be rights that are going to need to be observed and incumbent upon us when we not oppress them by lying to them or by tricking them or by deceiving them in any way. And again, this is exactly why in these beautiful words and simple words that Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, is using when he says in this haqq, which is haqq number 37, وَأَمَّا حَقُّ الْخَلِيطِ فَأَنْ لَا تَغُرَّهُ, that you don't deceive them, you don't, وَلَا تَغُشَّهُ, you don't trick them, وَلَا تُكَذِّبْهُ, and you don't lie to them, or you don't accuse them of lying, وَلَا تُغَفِّلَهُ, and you don't ignore them. We're going to be speaking about that as well. وَلَا تَخْدَعْهُ, and you don't trick them in any way. Now, when it comes to something like وَأَنْ لَا تُغَفِّلَهُ or أَنْ لَا تُغَفِّلَهُ, it means that you don't ignore them when they're speaking with you, when they're communicating with you. You don't get up and use your mobile phone, or you turn away, or you interrupt them, or any of these other bad conducts that are against common courtesy of interacting with other people. We're going to have to stop here. Visit us on www.parstoday.com, or you're able to email us on englishradio@irib.ir. Until our next program, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salli ya Rabbi ala Tah al-Amin, rahmatin arsaltahu lil alamin, wa ala alin nabiyyi ajma'in, fa bihim narjuka ahsin khatmina.
In the limelight.
While China has landed a spacecraft on the moon 3 times in the last 7 years, NASA has not landed there since 1972. The last Apollo mission. That could change in 2021, deepening the commercial transformation of American space efforts. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article authored by Michael Roston entitled Missions to Mars, Moon and Beyond Await Earth in 2021. This article was published on the New York Times. Stay tuned. About a month after the new Christian year has started on Earth, 3 spacecraft will put into the vicinity of Mars. These explorers, which launched in July last year, will herald of a busy year of space exploration, launches, and astronomical occurrences. What follows is a preview of some of 2021's most notable expected events. Private companies and the world's space agencies are likely to announce more. The United Arab Emirates, China, and the United States all launched robotic missions to Mars last summer, seeking shortened voyages during the period every 2 years when Earth is closest to the red planet. The three spacecraft will join a bustling community of explorers either in orbit or on the planet's surface. The first to arrive will be Emirati Hope Orbiter, the first deep space explorer of the Arab country's small space program. The mission will study the Martian atmosphere, sending valuable data back to scientists on Earth. It is to reach its destination on February 9th. China's Tianwen-1 mission is also to arrive at Mars on February 10th. After orbiting the planet for a time, it will send a lander containing a rover to the surface in May. Landing intact on the solar system's fourth planet is perilous, and only NASA has done it more than once. A successful landing there would extend China's record of impressive space flight achievements, especially after last year's Chang'e E-5 mission to the lunar surface, then back to Earth with a fresh cache of moon rocks. Soon after, on February 18, NASA's Perseverance rover will arrive and immediately plunge toward the surface of Mars. If it lands successfully, the rover will seek signs of extinct life in a dried-out crater lake and riverbed. But first, it will deploy Ingenuity, a small helicopter. That device has its own mission of carrying out the first powered flight from the surface of another planet. While China has landed a spacecraft on the moon 3 times in the last 7 years, NASA has not landed there since 1972. The last Apollo mission that would change in 2021, deepening the commercial transformation of American space efforts. NASA has in the past decade relied on private companies to build and operate spacecraft that could ferry cargo, and now people to the International Space Station, ISS. It is trying a similar approach with commercial lunar payload services. The program has contracted with a number of private companies to build robotic lunar landers that will carry cargo from NASA and other customers to the moon's surface. The first company, Pittsburgh Astrobotic, is scheduled to launch its Perseverance lander to the moon in June. It could be followed in October by Nova C, a spacecraft built by Initiative Machines of Houston. NASA also has its eye on returning astronauts to the moon this decade. Its first step will be an uncrewed test flight of the massive space launch system built for future American deep space launches. The rocket has faced numerous delays and ballooning costs, but NASA still plans a journey in 2021 known as Artemis 1. It will send Orion, a capsule for astronauts, around the moon and back to Earth. That test is tentatively scheduled for November. Deeper into the deep space, the most significantly and scientifically important mission of 2021 has been a long time coming. The launch of James Webb Space Telescope, effectively a successor to the Hubble telescope, has been postponed for years, plagued by technical problems and mounting costs. NASA and the world's astronomers and planetary scientists are eager to see it get off the ground at the end of October. The agency settled on that time frame after coronavirus pandemic and other problems added another delay to the existing schedule. Two other NASA explorers will also head out into the solar system. the double asteroid redirection test spacecraft, launching in July, aims to test whether a spacecraft could deflect a future asteroid that was headed toward Earth's surface. To do that, it will visit Deimos, a pair of near-Earth asteroids that travel around the Sun together and attempt a collision to notch the orbit of the smaller rock. A second mission, Lucy, will launch in October and travel much farther, making flybys through Jupiter's orbital path. There will be another study, the Trojans, asteroids that travel in the same orbit as Jupiter, but hundreds of millions of miles ahead or beyond, trapped there by the giant planet's gravity. Scientists think these space rockets could conceal secrets of how the solar system's outer planets are formed. Human spaceflight was transformed in 2020 as SpaceX successfully launched a pair of crews to the space station. The company is likely to send more astronauts to orbit in 2021, and not all of them may be working for NASA and other governmental space agencies. Multiple companies are working with SpaceX to launch paying customers on the Crew Dragon capsule. One of them, Axiom Space, could send its first private tourists to the space station late in the year. When NASA picked SpaceX to build transport for its astronauts, it also hired Boeing to do the same. During an uncrewed test to orbit in December 2019, a series of errors nearly led to the catastrophic loss of Boeing's Starliner capsule. To make up for that unsuccessful flight, Boeing will carry out a second test flight as early as March. Other human journeys to the space also beckon this year. Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin may send paying customers on short trips to the edge of space and back in 2021. China could also start launching pieces of its next-generation space station during the year, setting it on a course to have a regular human presence in low Earth orbit in the years to come. If 2020 taught people anything, it was to expect the unexpected. While COVID-19 darkened the world as it traveled around the sun, humanity was surprised by views of comet Neowise in the summer month and enthralled with the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn during the winter solstice. It's a big universe, and there's so much of it to be seen from our smaller part of it. A lunar eclipse on May 26th will overlap with a period when the moon is closer to Earth than usual, what some call a super blood moon. People in Australia and on Pacific Islands, as well as in Western United States, will get the best views of the occurrence. And some of the event will be visible in other parts of the Americas, as well as East and South Asia. Most people in North America will have to wait until 2024 to experience the next total solar eclipse, like the one in August 2017. But on June 10th, some North Americans will get a taste of what's to come in 3 years, when an annular solar eclipse darkens some skies. Also known as a ring of fire eclipse, it happens when the moon is too far from Earth to fully obstruct the sun, leaving a halo of sunlight around its edges. This unusual eclipse will cross over the North Pole as it travels, and only people in small parts of Canada and Russia will get the full effect. But those willing to wake early enough on parts of the East Coast and wear their safety glasses will get to see a partial eclipse around sunrise that morning.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali عليه السلام, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and I'm your host, Mehdi. We're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Please stay with us. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of To My Brother, I'm Muhammad. And today, I'm going to read to you an aphorism of Imam Ali from Nahjul Balagha. Before that, let's go ahead and listen to the Arabic words, and after that, I'm going to read you the English translation. Stay with us.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إن لله في كل نعمة حقا فمن أداه زاده منها ومن قصر فيه خاطر بزوال نعمته.
Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam said, "Surely in every blessing there is a right of Allah. If one discharges that right, Allah increases the blessing. And if one falls short of doing so, one stands in danger of losing the blessing."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's an honor to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. Now, one of the very beautiful things and profound things which we learn from Imam Ali alayhi salam is this concept that certain people who are worthy of special and unique knowledge are endowed and bestowed with this unique knowledge by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, one of the people, of course, who we see was endowed with this kind of knowledge of the unseen, ilm al-ghayb, and this knowledge of things that are to happen, of course, is Imam Ali alayhi salam. Now, regarding this idea, there is a tradition, a hadith, a narration, reported by Juwayriyah ibn Ma'ashar Abdi, who, by the way, was also foretold by Imam Ali about the way he was to be martyred, and in fact, that is the way that he was martyred. And so this tradition by Juwayriyah ibn Ma'ashar Abdi, he relates from Imam Ali alayhi salam regarding Imam Hussein. Juwayriyah reports, when I was accompanying Imam Ali on the way to Siffin, the battle of Siffin, this was the battle against Muawiyah, when we reached the highlands of Karbala, Imam Ali stood in a corner of the army camp, looking right and left. He started weeping. Then he said, "By Allah, this is their landing place where they will be killed." And so someone asked Imam Ali, "O Amir al-Mu'mineen, O Commander of the Believers, O Prince of the Believers, what is the name of this land?" Imam Ali alayhi salam says, "This is the land of Karbala and the place of martyrdom of a group who will go to paradise without reckoning, without questioning." People did not understand what Imam Ali meant until Imam Hussein alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, and his companions were martyred in the land of Karbala years later. Dear friends, again we find this intricate and profound lesson that if we are to follow someone, if we are to be the followers, the pupils, the students, the lovers, the ashiq of a person, let it be a person who is so close to Allah, the Almighty, the Exalted, that they have been given divine knowledge by Allah. And again, we find here that the martyrdom of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and so yet another profound lesson from Imam Ali alayhi salam, follow those who have a unique position, not in the eyes of society, but in the eyes of Allah. A profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger." And I ask you for protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. And I ask you for protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
We invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Every name from the Islamic perspective has two definitions. One is a theological definition and one is a moral definition. When we say Muslim, who is a Muslim? Anyone who says the kalimatain, La ilaha illallah, Muhammadun Rasulullah, is a Muslim. That is a given, unanimously accepted by Shias and Sunnis alike. We don't see what is in his heart. Whoever says those words, he or she has to be accepted as a Muslim. Of course, Islam is only good for this dunya. The person becomes Muslim, he is Pak for us, the relationships of marriage would be okay, and we have to treat him. Things which are wajib on others will be wajib on that person. Things which are haram would be haram on that person. Islam is only a matter of dunya. When you talk about Jannat, it's not Islam. It is Iman. We'll come to that later on. So the theological definition of the name Muslim, anyone who says La ilaha illallah Muhammadun Rasulullah is a Muslim. His life, his honor, and his property is now sacrosanct. But then there is another definition given in our books and Sunni books, unanimously, by Rasulullah of a Muslim on a moral level. Where he says, Al-Muslimu man salima an-nas min lisanihi wa yadihi. And this is a narration from Miqdad bin Amr. Where he says to Rasulullah, Ya Rasulullah, you just come from a battle. أَرَأَيْتُ رَجُلًا ضَرَبَنِي بِالسَّيْفِ فَقَطَعَ يَدِي ثُمَّ لَاظَ مِنِّي بِشَجَرَةٍ. Hypothetical situation, he is asking to Rasulullah, that what do you say about a person that we were in the battle, in jihad, and he hits me with his sword and cuts my arm, but I'm still fighting against him. And when I was soon to overcome him, he went and hid behind a tree. And when I got close, قَالَ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ مُحَمَّدٌ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ. When I got close to him, where I was going to now overcome him, he recited the kalima. أَقْتُلُهُ. This was the hypothetical question Miqdad has from Rasulullah. Do I have a right to kill him? Do you think his kalima was sincere? He just cut the arm of a Muslim. Now that he is going to be overcome and defeated, he says the kalima. And Rasulullah is being asked, should I kill him? Rasul said, La. فَعِدْتُ مَرَّتَيْنَ وَثَلَاثَ. Miqdad says, I repeated this question 2-3 times. All 3 times Rasulullah says, no. And then third time Rasulullah says, if you do that, he will be on your status and you will be on his status. Means the life of a Muslim becomes muhtaram, sacrosanct, when a person utters the kalima. Whether it is there in his heart, that's not our business. We don't have the ability to know that.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. Introduction to Islamic Lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. And I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, Materialistic Lifestyle. Brothers and sisters, we know that Islam is a religion that provides you with a complete code of life. Islam does not want to see you becoming all materialistic. You live in this material world, but without being materialistic. Well, when we talk about this materialistic lifestyle, these materialists, they lead unhappier lives, and they are worse to the people around them. And we will get into the reasoning of it. For now, I'm just putting forth the claims. And it seems the social media might be fueling materialistic attitudes as well. You look around and all you see is materialism growing. We know from research that materialism tends to be associated with treating others in more competitive, manipulative, and selfish ways, as well as with being less empathetic. Materialism is associated with lower levels of well-being, less pro-social interpersonal behavior, more ecologically destructive behavior, and worse academic outcomes. It also is associated with more spending, problems, and debt. Look around in your families. Inshallah, Allah is protecting you, but look at your friends, look at your peers, look at your co-workers. How many of them are caught up in this debt cycle? They're just paying off their loans and debts, and you know, they're working day in, day out just to be able to pay off their debts. In most cases, these debts are accumulated
because of their materialistic lifestyle. The decisions that they made in the past, they were wrong decisions, and now they're stuck in this materialistic cycle. Welcome back, dear listeners. Before the break, we were discussing the cycle of materialism. How do people get stuck in debts and paying off their loans and interest, and you know, they lose their sleep over it, right? Why does it happen? It happens because they make some wrong decisions at some point in time in their lives, and later on they have to pay for those wrong decisions. According to research analysis, the more highly people endorsed materialistic values, the more they experienced unpleasant emotions, depression, and anxiety. The more they reported physical health problems, such as stomach aches and headaches, and the less they experienced pleasant emotions and felt satisfied with their lives. So these things are inversely proportional. You want to live a life that is, you know, a pleasant experience for you in terms of your emotion, in terms of your satisfaction from your life, you have to shy away from materialistic lifestyle. Because what materialistic lifestyle does is it captures you and it pretty much, you know, put you in a position where you start hating your own life. The more that people watch television, for instance, the more materialistic their values become. And aren't we experiencing this today? You look at something on your television and then you go like, I want this. Then another thing on the television, I want this, right? They're even dictating your lifestyle. Materialism rises in individuals as social media use increases. Look, social media is also indoctrinating our next generation. That makes sense, right? Since most social media messages also contain advertising, which is how the social media companies make a profit. So we are surrounded with materialism, right? This is why we see that we start to become and think materialistic as well. And this is something that becomes the focus of our lives, unfortunately. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Chad Wolf, the acting Homeland Security Secretary who helped enact key pieces of the Trump administration's hardline immigration agenda, resigned on Monday, 11th of January. As the nation confronts heightened security threats after an attack on the U.S. Capitol building by supporters of the outgoing president, Chad Wolf said his exit was prompted in part by court findings that he was illegally serving in his job. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Lauren Gambino. The piece is titled, Acting U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf Resigns. Stay with us for more of Lauren Gambino's article. Chad Wolf, the acting Homeland Security Secretary who helped enact key pieces of the Trump administration's hardline immigration agenda, resigned on Monday, 11th of January. As the nation confronts heightened security threats after an attack on the U.S. Capitol building by supporters of the outgoing President Donald Trump. Chad Wolf said his exit was prompted in part by court findings that he was illegally serving in his job. Wolf said in a letter to staff at the Department of Homeland Security that he had intended to remain in office until the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden, but would instead step down at 11:59 p.m. on Monday night. His departure, he said, was compelled in part by recent events and by court rulings invalidating some of the Trump administration's immigration policies, citing findings that Wolf was illegally serving in the role. "I'm saddened to take this step, as it was my intention to serve the department until the end of this administration," said Chad Wolf, who had been serving in an acting capacity since November of 2019 and was never confirmed by the U.S. Senate. A report by the Government Accountability Office, GAO, determined that Wolf's appointment to the role violated the rules of succession, and as such he had been serving unlawfully in the role. Judges, citing that finding in court rulings to invalidate some of the policy changes enacted by the Trump administration during his tenure. On Monday, Chad Wolf cited the ongoing and meritless court rulings regarding the validity of my authority as acting Secretary of Homeland Security as a reason for stepping down. These events and concerns increasingly serve to divert attention and resources away from the important work of the department at this critical time of a transition of power, he wrote. The letter does not explicitly mention last week's assault on the Capitol building, which Chad Wolf described as tragic and sickening in a statement on 7th of January. In that statement, he also called on President Donald Trump to strongly condemn the violence that had been carried out in his name and committed to staying in his position to ensure an orderly transition to a Biden administration. He is the third cabinet secretary to resign following the attack on the Capitol building. Pete Gaynor, the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, will take over as acting Homeland Security Secretary less than 2 weeks before the department will help coordinate security for Joe Biden's inauguration amid heightened threats of violence and protests. As a last act, Chad Wolf announced that he had authorized the U.S. Secret Service to begin enhanced security operations on 13th of January, nearly a full week before the inauguration ceremony, in light of the events of the past week and the evolving security landscape leading up to the inauguration. Before the riots, the Secret Service was due to begin implementing special security measures on the day before the inauguration on 19th of January. During his time in office, Chad Wolf was among the president's most loyal lieutenants, eagerly stepping into the spotlight to defend the administration's actions before Congress and on cable news. This summer, he became the public face of the administration's crackdown on protesters in the wake of nationwide demonstrations against police brutality and racism. Chad Wolf's decision to deploy tactical agents to detain protesters in Portland, Oregon, sparked national backlash and criticism that he was bending the department to Donald Trump's political agenda. Chad Wolf's resignation comes hours before Donald Trump is due to visit Alamo, Texas, where he will survey progress on the U.S.-Mexico border wall. "I leave knowing that the Department of Homeland Security has positioned itself for an orderly and smooth transition to President-elect Joe Biden's DHS team," he wrote. "Welcome them. Educate them and learn from them. They are your leaders for the next 4 years, a time which undoubtedly will be full of challenges and opportunities to show the American public the value of the Department of Homeland Security and why it is worth the investment.
The things that he did at that time for this revolution, if today we can say, like, if Iran has the constitution today, it's because of the hard working of Shahid Beheshti, the dedication that he had on this work.
This is a natural principle, that people are affected by the rulers.
One thing very obvious about his character that made him more influential was his management skills. Not only management skills, but in the more modern sense of it, leadership qualities. He was truly a leader. And when it came to him actually leading the whole group of scholars who were working on the Iranian constitution, you can see the high capability of this person.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. And I'm Atta, the host of this program. We are mainly concerned with the thoughts and works of the most prominent Muslim thinkers, jurists, and philosophers all across the Nation of Islam, with the presence of two experts over here in the studio, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi and Dr. Reza Zadeh. Dr. Reza Zadeh, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting
You're
me.
Welcome, and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, the main person with whom we are mainly concerned in this new series is Sayyid Muhammad Husseini Beheshti, may known as Ayatollah Beheshti. We try to give a summary of the most important events of his life in our previous discussion, but from this episode onward, inshallah, we want to get to some of his main thoughts. And we know that Shahid Beheshti was famous for his speeches and lectures here and there, most of them in Farsi language, some of them in English. But the case is variety of the topics that he had mastership over and tried to have this positive interaction with the young generation, with both the Hausa and the university, and this made him very much famous among the young generation on that time, especially speaking fluently in Farsi language and eloquently on different topics with knowledge. For today's discussion, let's listen to one short part of one of his audio files regarding God, and then we'll continue our discussion.
خیلی ها هستن میگن خدا، ولی وقتی خوب حرفشون رو میشکافی میبینی به مجموعه این طبیعت.
There are many people who claim to believe in God. However, when analyzing their words, we realize what they believe in as God is this unified and harmonized nature. When you ask them who God is, they say, look at this unified, orderly, and organized nature. This is what has always been in universe, still is, and will remain, of course. Their God is this nature, bound with time and place, as unified and organized. They believe in divine unity as the unity of nature. There are people who do not believe in nature as God, but rather in the stabilized order of nature. They say, yes, this nature is not God in itself, but look at the stabilized, immortal, and unified order of nature. This is God. However, to our perspective, this very unified and organized universe and that unified order of nature are not God. The universe and nature are both creatures and manifestations of God. The order of nature is the manifestation